Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discussed the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
Welcome to We Do That, a Taz Fancast. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I'm your favorite fantasy kitty, Jake.
And I'm your other co-host, Colin.
This week's episode, Amnesty, Episode 7.
Okay, guys, here's a quick synopsis for you. We find our trio right where we left them, in Amnesty Lodge, facing down a federal agent. For the first time in living memory, Travis flubs a role, and the Lodge has a live-in law enforcer. The trio then heads to Swim Kid's pool, where Duck immediately helps himself to senior citizen's clothes. Clint ignores the warnings of the keeper and common sense, and launches himself into the pool. The trio manage to work together to survive their first run-in with water, but just barely.
Thank you, Colin. That was a good synopsis and a very good episode. Some brief housekeeping before we get into it this week. We know Spotify isn't working. We are actively working on it to get ourselves back. It seems like when we switched over on hosting, things got messed up with the RSS feed. But we know about it. We're working on it. If anyone's having issues on other platforms, do let us know.
iCast, Zone of Truth. I'll go first because I'm hella wrong. Because I predicted that Mama would come back and drop some truth bombs at the end of the episode. And, well, you know, no.
Not yet. No Mama yet.
Not yet. Maybe one day. Also, well, we can get to this, but also no Dr. Harris Bonkers. Kind of leaving out some big people. Anyway, I did halfway, right? Maybe. They did go to investigate the school, and they were slightly derailed by an authority figure who was a swim instructor for senior citizens doing jazzercise in the pool. So... close, but no.
Well, to be fair, I don't think they told us that it was the weekend before this episode. So I totally thought school, like you, Chris, I thought school was going to be in session and it would be a principal or vice principal or something. But it was suddenly the weekend and nobody was in school.
Yeah, I am glad that they had that running, but. Well, we'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. I predicted that they would go to the swimatorium, which they did.
Yep.
The swim zone?
I'm going swimatorium. That's just like my personal choice. I think it really rolls off the tongue. And that they would easily fight the monster and that Aubrey would boil it all off and then they'd have to fight a steam monster. They did fight the monster, but Aubrey decided to make it chili instead of boiling it, which I don't know how I feel about that. So I'm going to give myself like a 60%.
The Russian judge gives you a 4.
I'll give you a D on your predictions last week.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So while we're not improving at figuring out what's going to happen, because I think we're trying to get too detailed, y'all, maybe broad strokes this week.
Will be a monster.
Yeah, right? Can't go wrong there. The Nailed guys it. Are getting a little bit better at the system, and I will say from the top, I really enjoyed the pacing of this episode. I thought that whether or not it was as much story as Griffin planned to get through in this portion, I think it was a good manageable bit. And I liked the amount of dice rolling that happened mm-hmm. this time. I think they're hitting that point. And I don't know if they're listening or we just should have trusted the system and let them get through mini arcs and get into a season. But there were enough rolls this time where, you know, they were doing well and then they were doing poorly. And it added that element of chance that really makes this more fun. And I was really into that. I really like that.
Yeah, no, I
I agree, and I think that, you know, the level of interaction from Justin Clinton Travis was what we were hoping it would be. So I agree that I think a lot of the concerns that we had seem to have washed away a little bit. You know, like, this is what we come to the show for.
Yeah, I will agree that it was a good episode. I enjoyed it a lot. It doesn't necessarily, I don't think it speaks against any of the criticisms we had during the mini arc, except that they probably designed the mini arc not as well as they could have. Because I don't think there's any reason to be derived of these very enjoyable. And it's not the plot point. We did move the story forward, but it's Duck floundering with, nope, just leave. I'll get your clothes. Don't worry about it. And it's Aubrey trying to bluff an FBI. Like, that's, to me, what I enjoy about the Adventure Zone. It's this stupid stuff that just makes me laugh. I'm glad to see return to the Adventure Zone.
Yeah, and I do think it speaks to how, I don't know about the Macrowise in general, but at least how Griffin was treating what's important to him about the Adventure Zone. I think it's hard to speak to someone's intentions, but it feels like based on how he designed his mini arc, what's important to him is the storytelling and getting this world out. And because of that, that's what his mini arc focused on, and we didn't get these bits. Whereas when he's given long form, he's able to still accomplish his goals, but it fits into the form factor of what we consider to be the Adventure Zone, sort of the heart of the Adventure Zone, which is fun role playing, actually playing the game with heart and chance and stuff going wrong.
Yeah. Totally agreed that I think it does exactly that. I wish the mini arcs hadn't have had that pressure to get through the story, because I don't think the story should have mattered at that point.
And I wonder if that would, how much that would have changed our impressions of Amnesty. You know, I think the three of us felt some levels of disappointment when Amnesty was released as season two. And I wonder if they had played it out as a smaller story to tell, would we have been more excited about jumping into it now? But with the caveat of sort of ripping the Band-Aid off of all this exposition that happened in the mini arc and just having to push through that means we're starting season two in a great place. We know a lot of stuff that they'd still be probably slogging through if they started from, you know, zero in a story.
Well, that's true, but I think that's only because of the choice in the mini arc to start with, like, the origin story of this trio. Instead of just,
yeah,
like, Sylvain and, I guess, all what of I'm that. Saying
is maybe, yes, as much as I thought the mini arc should be a proving ground for a game system, maybe they are. Let's introduce our listeners to three worlds and ourselves to three worlds, and then pick the one we want to live in. Not focusing on the game system like I had initially thought they would be approaching it, because I think getting those expositional moments out of the way and getting all of this background information before we start the season means they can do a lot more right now in terms of jumping into things, setting up funny bits. That I think the fact that Griffin felt he could open the season with them walking into senior citizens doing aquarobics speaks to that Griffin knows his story is safe. Like, the story he wants to tell is in there. He's gotten all the important bits out of the way, so he can just go and have them do things, and that's fine.
Yeah, my only point of contention was that I think he could have started it that way. I don't think you have to have the backstory in place first. We certainly did not have the backstory in place during Balance and things like that. Because again, it worries me a little bit that everything has already been designed. And so, you know, And maybe that's fine if the boys have enough room to ad-lib these funny bits. But it's still one of those things where you know, maybe you don't need the whole story to be there from day one. You just have two or three arcs prepped to go. Work through those and see where it goes.
You know, and I think again, like Chris was saying, the choice to take all the old folks' clothes and just try to throw them in a bus. That is, I cannot imagine that Griffin would have thought that that was how that situation would resolve itself. So there clearly is room for the boys to explore and play. And I think...
I don't know. Griffin said they already had a bus, so maybe he's thought about some of it.
Yeah, I mean...
No, I think that's fair, but the boy's reaction changed that situation. You know? I think that's what I'm excited to hear. Sorry, I hit my mic there.
It'll be interesting to see if Griffin... what sort of consequences their actions will deliver. Because that's mm-hmm. what I think we haven't seen yet, is, yeah, they have this room to play, but, you know, Doc being, no, I'll get your clothes, don't worry about it, it's an all-included service with the park, forest service. That's an inconsequential decision. That doesn't matter. And now, I mean, certainly... Ned jumping into the pool was a much more consequential decision that he kind of has to let play out.
Guys, I still don't know what a foon is. Like, I cannot picture the dive.
So, are you familiar with a jackknife? Nope. So, standing at the top of the board, bent over 90 degrees at the waist, arm straight down. So, you kind of look like a...
You're trying to touch your toes?
Yeah, like you're trying to touch your toes, but in very right, like a right angle and then a very severe angle with your arms totally together.
Okay.
And basically, when you jump up, you spring outwards to sort of get yourself away from the board, and then your feet and your hands go simultaneously towards the water, at what point you would normally finish up effectively a front roll and only hands go in first. The foon, it sounds like you don't do anything after you leave the dive.
So hands, so like hands and feet hit the water at the same time in that same like toe touching motion.
Toes would presumably go first, because if you're right angled at your waist, you're
You're a little short.
Yeah, so yeah, but yes, the idea is hands and feet all hit together, and then all the water still slams your torso mm-hmm. because your torso is horizontal to the water.
Do we know how it's spelled?
I assume phoon, like the end of typhoon.
So I couldn't tell if it was foon or thune, like with a TH instead.
No, that's what they teach you in Skyrim.
Foon!
Never played. I figured it was about, developed by Senator John Thune of South Dakota, that he was the first one to do it.
Don't make me Google up a list of South Dakota senators.
I mean, it's...
No. Because this is the thing that I know about Colin, is that if he's going to make a joke like that, he did his research, because he knows we would call him out on it.
Not only did I do my research...
That is clearly the senator.
I had researched the senator for my 11th grade government class. That's why the name came to mind. Senator John Thune.
So how do you know he's still in office?
Wikipedia.
Okay, fair.
Well, not to derail this great bit of goofing for a bit. I did actually, Colin, you raise an interesting point about sort of consequences to their interactions while they're doing with these retirees and trying to get them out. And I wonder, while like taking their clothes and moving them is inconsequential, suggesting that they take the whole group and go to the lodge seems like it could be consequential. And I wonder how Griffin will treat that. Because I think it could either go like, this doesn't serve Griffin's story, so they came and went, and Barclay is mad, but it doesn't do anything. Or this becomes a whole bit. Like, they're always at the lodge, so they can't go outside, and it's a whole...
Well, and I think especially because... the FBI agent is staying at the lodge. Suddenly this truckload of old folk show up. And, well, Why are you here? Well, because Duck and Ned and Aubrey said we should come here.
Right.
You know, and because he has already been interested in these guys, those might spiral that situation forward a little bit.
So I'm
and even disconnected from the plot, I think it would be great if every time they Aubrey and Danny tried to go and like use the hot springs, there was some retiree sitting there, which like ruined any romantic moments they try to set up.
That would be hilarious.
And yeah, that's good. That.
I'm not as concerned with the FBI agent running into the old folks because, I mean, it's a hot spring that's available for use. The FBI agent, I mean, if they actually went there just for their class, the FBI agent said he was going to go look around town, get to know the area, they would be in and out before he even came back. And even if he were to come back, is it really, you know, is it really that far that, you know, they would be suspicious of him staying at a lodge where there are rooms to be rented, or him being suspicious of people using the hot spring? What I'm more interested in is the fact that, and I hope this continues, of Clint just driving people towards the lodge. Just, let's go to the lodge. Let's see what happens. And just, it's all...
Let's go to the lodge.
I really hope it blows up in somebody's face, just because there's suddenly all these people around the lodge all the time. You know, somebody's going to slip up and accidentally be a werewolf when they aren't supposed to be a werewolf.
Well, it makes an especially great werewolf. For whenever Mama comes back, to have her come back and just everything has run amok while she's been gone. That, you know, they're out fighting water monsters using not really their proper powers and trying to hit it with a stick, and the lodge is full of normies.
Yeah, that would be excellent.
Yeah, I picture her coming back like Troy in the darkest timeline from Community. Just coming in with the pizzas and the room's on fire. And, Chevy Chase has been shot. And...
Spoiler alert, man.
What's going on? What?
Some of us haven't gotten that far in Community yet.
It's been out for like 15 years.
I just got Hulu.
Jesus. I feel like we're going to head towards the battle with the water monster very, very soon. But before we do, talking about the FBI agent, is it peculiar how easily they got off in this first interaction? Or do you buy that the agent...
That's not our business.
Like... Okay. No, I don't think so.
That was low-hanging fruit, I'm sorry.
Because if
I'm better than that.
At this point, the FBI does not, from what I can tell, doesn't have any, like, legal right to the film. And so it's easier to get what you want through being nice and being cordial than it would be. Like, I don't think most FBI agents are actually the kind of, you know, knock down the door and demand what they want to see, because you just won't get results that way. So I think him seeing like...
Yeah, so I guess it makes sense he'd be a lighter touch at the start.
Yeah, I mean, if he needs to bring in the big guns or whatever, I'm sure he could. But at first, you know, it's a Saturday afternoon. You ran into this guy that somehow... he said, yeah, when you have time, show me your tape. Now, I did think they dealt with it very poorly. I thought trying to get him to go away by saying, bed bugs.
Right.
Now, I do think they could get him to go away. And I don't know if this will happen or not. I imagine not. But just have Barclay take a day and drive 8 hours away and get spotted as Sasquatch somewhere else.
Yeah, so that it immediately throws him off and he has to go that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be an easy out.
Yeah.
And just make sure Ned isn't the one to publish that video.
Yeah, I can't imagine they will ever take that easy of an out. I don't think Griffin would left them off, even if they pulled off that idea. I imagine Griffin not letting it play out the way they want it to.
No, I don't think he'd let Barclay leave the lodge. without Mama there.
Yeah, fair. That seems like a reasonable out for that character.
Just ruined my own perfect plot point.
So, with our sort of two intro scenes wrapped up, we arrive at them actually fighting a monster very, very quickly. Episode 2, for, you know, the sake of season 2, they're doing battle with water and making some weird choices.
So let's start with, I guess, Aubrey's choices?
Those are the most concerning.
So I get trying to make the water chilly to get the senior citizens to want to get out, and to make the hot spring seems more appealing. Not sure I get it as much when Ned is in the pool.
I mean, I buy that logic.
I don't think cold water... I don't think it gets appreciably more viscous by lowering it 2 degrees.
I think the idea was that there is something in the water. Like, that just like Ned was in the water, there is something there that is controlling the water. And that by making it cold and uncomfortable, the water, like, the thing itself would sort of slow down. Not necessarily that it was going to make the water icy or slushy.
Well, I believe that's what Travis said, is he was hoping to make the water thicker to slow down Ned. I think
he was trying to play on some of Aubrey's naivete towards magic and how maybe the world works, though it seems like from her intros she'd have more like street smarts than that.
Yeah.
Because she's been out on her own for a while, so I don't know why she would not know like how water works.
Well,
I guess being a new magician, like, how do you know?
Well, and I mean, to what Jake said, if that was the logic, I would have no problem with it. Let's make this creature really uncomfortable and get him out of the water. And I think I wish they had actually said that, because that sounds like great logic to me.
Yeah, I guess it would seem to be a strange choice, though, because how would you know where the creature would go? I think I would have made the assumption that we need to contain the creature to this pool while we know where it is, versus what if we drive it out and what ends up happening and you drive it into a larger water source?
And so that was an idea that I really was curious about, because I don't think the yellow light was in there when they got in there.
Right. When the senior citizens were in there, there was no yellow light.
So, how does the assumption then go that, well, it wasn't in all of the water then, but it is when the yellow light went away the next time?
I think there were bubbles coming from the drain, and so it may be that they did not realize that it was basically already connected. To it could be in any water anywhere. The way I was thinking about it is that maybe they just didn't realize that it could be anywhere, and now that they've seen it and then see it disappear, like, oh shit, it could be in any water that's connected to the municipal water supply or whatever.
Well, but wait, okay, doesn't it only reveal itself as the yellow light when Aubrey turns on her new third eye?
But it was a bright light with a swim kit.
Right. But in terms of the other two, in terms of Duck and Ned,
Ned sees it as well, underwater.
Yeah, but my point is to whether or not it was there when they entered the swimnasium. I think they don't know, because Aubrey didn't have her sight on yet, and the other two are out of the water, and if people are out of the water, can't see it. So it may have been there, just not doing anything. It might have just been kicking out wherever those bubbles were coming from.
You're right, it may be, but if Swim Kid and Ned could see it, I don't know why the senior citizens couldn't see it, except for, you know, cataracts and, you know, other...
Yeah. Fair point.
Bad diseases.
Unless it only shows when it's being aggressive. I would then also have a question about what triggers it.
Yeah, maybe like, maybe it can only be maybe it's only visible when. Nope, I thought I had something there with like Schrodinger, but no.
That seems like a stretch.
I don't. What was I gonna say? Yeah, Aubrey's choices. It also seems weird to me that in this situation, where she may not be certain what to do, that she wouldn't go to that magic with which she is most comfortable.
Right. It does seem like default should be big fire.
Yeah. For her default reaction to be, oh, okay, wait a minute. Chilly. It's chilly now.
Well, I think when we consider the background of her magic that's sort of established, that is like the changing, like the withdrawing and the transferring of heat rather than making fire. Fire's not really supposed to hurt water.
But so it can transform
if she's
it.
But
she's the lady flame, though. She's not the lady temperature change.
Boy, what a bad
Yeah, you're right.
That
I would not
be.
Go see that marquee.
This, the lady thermostat, this, who adjusts it so it's just slightly uncomfortable for the current season.
She has a smartphone in her pocket, just controlling the thermostat.
I mean, do you think they could go and, like, get a Nest and just stick the Nest on the water monster and then just turn it down and with that and that would suck it out?
When Aubrey's, sort of like when we play D&D and we have to replace somebody with, like, a bag of potions or something, it's when Aubrey's gone, they replace her with just a Nest thermostat.
Or I like the idea that they carry around both, like, a space heater and a fan and just deploy them as needed.
Who is that? Did, like, tape a picture of Aubrey to it as it oscillates? that's Aubrey.
Just slap a Pine Guard sticker on the back.
Yeah.
If y'all want to make that into fan art, send it to us at WeDoThatPod on Twitter.
So what about Doc? What do you think about Doc's choices?
I loved Justin's decision to have Doc freeze. Because I think that totally tracks in this, oh, shit, like, this is really real kind of moment. You know, whereas I could see the encounter with the first Bomb-Bomb being more of a reflex driven by adrenaline kind of response. This one that was a little more planned and thought out, and they kind of had an idea of what they might be getting into. He brought Beacon with him, so he was prepared. So I loved that character choice. Because I think this is a big thing, and there is a lot there to be like, yo, maybe I'm not as ready for this as I thought I was.
So, I think it's very true to the character, and I do think you raise a good point that it, you know, it contrasts nicely with all the training he's done. He did all this training to get good with Beacon, and suddenly it
well,
doesn't...
good in air quotes, right? Like,
right.
I think that's the
yeah.
point, right? Like,
better.
Well, yeah, like, he's not actually prepared.
But even if he's good with Beacon, it doesn't matter because this is not an enemy that can be beaten with Beacon. Or that can
yeah.
seemingly...
And it's a fun evolution from the fight with the bear when he has the gun and the bear shows up and he throws the gun at the bear and runs away. We're sort of seeing the next evolution of that. I was like, okay, I have a weapon, I've drawn it, I'm facing my target, and... Well, don't really know what the next step is because that's not solid.
One thing I want to throw out there for you guys, and just I want to see, I'm not 100% sure how I feel on it yet, but it took me back to early stage Taco, where...
So just a shell?
No.
Jesus.
That's so bad. In one of the arcs, I forget which arc it is exactly. I want to say Crystal Kingdom, but it might have been the one before that, where Justin basically says, Griffin, I think I have your puzzle figured out. I think I have your puzzle figured out, but I don't think Taco does. And so what am I supposed to stay true to the fiction and play Taco as an aloof idiot type wizard? And this was very early. Or if I know the answer, if I can think of something to do, am I supposed to do it? And now,
right.
And I guess it's something I want to throw out there because I think it is a good character choice, but is it going to limit Justin's ability to play openly and freely if he's trying to adhere to good character choices?
I mean, I think it gives him a roadmap to keep changing. I think eventually he will reach a level of competency that allows him to act in these situations. And I think that's going to be a really cool moment. He's going to get, like, his limit break will activate and he'll just, like, whoop whatever monster is in his way. So I think, yes, it does limit his choices, but I don't think that's a bad thing. Because I think his character's choices are limited right now, especially as we sort of reflect on his level of preparedness and his overall sort of confidence in his own abilities.
Yeah, I think you're totally right, Jake. And I think in terms of the narrative, that makes total sense and is a great storytelling choice. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I also think it ties into something we've sort of talked about previously about rule structures and how them knowing the rules is not the point, that, you know, them breaking the rules is kind of where some of the greatness of Adventure Zone comes from. And I think it also sets up for some funny moments where they do have to have, you know, an OOC conversation of like, okay, so here's the deal. Duck doesn't know how to operate a VCR, but Justin does. So we can't watch this tape that Ned, you know, something dumb like that.
Right.
And so it's going in the same thing we said before, like where structure allows them to have fun moments where they break out of it. I think these two things will work well together to create good, funny moments where they discuss sort of Duck being not great at being a chosen and some very satisfying narrative growth within the fiction.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, going back to the balance arc, is it became, it was at its best when sort of the personalities of the brothers and Clint meshed with the personalities of their player characters. And they kind of got more full-formed personalities that, certainly Ned and Duck and Aubrey have strong personalities, but I don't think at this point that they're perfectly meshed with the personalities of their creators, which is not a bad thing, because I think it's an evolution of getting comfort of, you know, who is Duck, how does Duck operate, and how does Justin operate Duck. And so I am actually very, you know, encouraged and excited to see where it goes from here, because I do agree that it's a good character choice, and I'm interested to see how Justin continues to grow into that character.
Yeah, and I think the part that sort of goes hand in hand with that is having Griffin set Duck up for situations where Justin can test the limits of what Duck can do, and allow that growth. So while Justin can, you know, actively make choices about how far Duck has moved, it's going to need external forces to keep pushing him along the path so that Justin gets comfortable playing Duck in various situations. Griffin needs to present those situations, and so that Duck actually does gain skills and confidence and can play up to maybe a level at which Justin can function as an OOC person. And hopefully Griffin's arc will let them get there in a meaningful way and not have to fall back on any of the montage-y kind of things that we've used in the past or could be used to move them forward past that.
Yeah.
I wonder, this is sort of derailing from the direct plot discussion, but with their talk about the leveling system in Monster of the Week and how it's, you need 5 experience points to level up. You get 1 experience points for every failure. With the rate at which they are rolling, I don't think those are going to align with where Lunar Interludes, as Griffin sort of referred to them, fell in the balance campaign. You know, they had a failure each, I think, this episode, if not multiple, you know, if not 2 for a couple of them. And so if they're hitting 5 experience points, do you think it matters if they level up at that moment? I mean, presumably Griffin will have written the difficulty level based on wherever they're starting. So I don't think in terms of fighting monsters it matters, but I wonder how, if you guys have any opinions about how the flow of that progression would go in terms of RPG character leveling.
I mean, I think... Sorry. I think it feels like it's going to sort of naturally land back on the same sort of milestone leveling that they used in balance. Because you're right, you know, there were a lot of successes. And, you know, this, maybe it does get to the fact that I'm less familiar with how leveling in other systems works and the speed at which characters level. I guess knowing that Monster of the Week is intended to be a little more grounded, you know, not to, I guess, inflate quite so much, I guess. You know, whether it's through health or skills or any of these things, maybe it's fine that they don't level up.
Well,
maybe it's fine that it takes them a little longer too. I don't know yet. I'm not worried yet though.
So my best guess would be that Griffin will essentially allow them to bank levels to redeem, during the next larger interlude, which I assume is where...
So they end up with 15 points, so they go plus 3 on...
And so they go 3, which I kind of prefer because I don't, you know, if you're in the middle of combat and you have a failed roll, it's like, oh, and then you hear the little chimes and da-da-da-ding, level up. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Whereas if it's, okay, you beat this monster, you go back home, you reflect on it, you do training, whatever, that's what allows you to level up. It's the experience of having beaten the monster.
Yeah, well, and I think that's what I'm wondering about, because that experience doling out was totally in Griffin's hands for balance, because D&D, you get experience, the experience is based on the monsters you fight, and Griffin decided how much experience those were worth, and at that rate, I imagine he was just sort of, no, we're just going to hit these milestones and go forwards. With it being, with Monster of the Week, it being detached from the keeper's hands, like, if they just have a shitty day and roll 5 failures, what, I wonder what is meant to be happening there. And obviously they're adapting the system, so what will happen is whatever Griffin wants to happen, which I imagine will be, Colin, as you said, sort of either banking it and dealing with it later. But I...
Or ignoring it.
I sort of wonder if... Yeah, or ignoring it. I wonder if the idea in the system design is that if you're having a really bad set of rolls, why not give you a handicap in a new ability or something to get you out of this rut? And if you're in the middle of fighting a monster and you just can't make it work, well, have this new ability so that you can beat this monster.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind that I think we saw in this episode... is that leveling in this system seems much less complicated than it was in D&D.
Yeah, it's pick... What was it? Pick 2 things? You can either get skill points or you can get a new ability from your playbook.
Right, so it's...
Or another playbook.
So, I think... I don't know that I would like to see these improvements applied mid-fight or mid-combat. Because I feel like there is a chance, certainly, that Griffin will design the monsters to play well or play well against the current abilities of of our players. And so if you could get, you know, that fifth fail and do a bada bing upgrade and suddenly it's a lot easier to fight this monster, maybe that is the intention of the system. But I do not think...
Right, but that won't be how the monster's designed. Yeah,
yeah, that won't be narratively interesting.
Quote, unquote. Yeah, and that's a good point. I guess I have to remember that the rules of Monster of the Week are going to be very much detached from how the story plays out, since Griffin is tailoring both sides of it to fit what they're doing. It doesn't... We don't need to rely on it as heavily as I might be thinking about it.
Now... how do you guys feel about them using Roll20 now instead of just Skype, I guess?
I am fine with it, except that I miss the sound.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Like, I got very used to, like, okay, you know, roll, and you don't hear... Whoa, that was a terrible vocalized dice. I normally have a dice next to my desk. I don't today. Whatever.
Give me two more.
I won't...
Third one's the charm.
Is this now against the Scat podcast?
I would totally do a Scatman John fan cast. Scatman's World. Anyway, I'm gonna link to that in the next episode description. Yeah, that I think is my only thing. I wonder if they have discovered in Roll20 the ability to do a private roll that you just share with the DM, and whether they would make any use of that.
Yeah.
Because I do think there was benefit to having a little bit of leeway in terms of sort of being able to fudge things for make it more fun and move things along when they needed to. And I wonder if they would ever do private rolls so that Griffin could be like, hey, listen, I failed, but do you want to kind of move this along maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I wondered too, and I guess the system isn't designed this way, but, you know, areas in which, and I know the system isn't designed this way, but for instance, when Griffin has NPCs fighting NPCs, you know, when he has Mama stepping in and helping out with monsters, or Barclay, like, how do you determine who wins? It seems like it would just be narratively, but I always enjoyed, you know, seeing him roll against himself and see how he does.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am going to imagine that Griffin's going to do all he can to avoid putting himself in that situation.
Agreed.
You know, even like at the end of the mini arc, he made sure that Mama and Barclay were not involved in the final fight with the monster because they were off doing whatever excuse he gave for it.
Well, they were at the front of the cave, keeping away the other animals that would have joined the werebear's pelt or whatever.
Right. Right. But he, you know, effectively removed
from
any need fight. For him to work on that as a system. So, I imagine that if it ever comes to it, Griffin's just going to make up how it goes. And I think using the sort of spirit of the system, just do a whole bunch of soft moves of the NPCs against each other without any real hard move being taken.
Yeah, any real consequence. I mean, I agree. I just, I always enjoyed that of earlier parts of this podcast. So I'll be kind of sad to see it go.
Yeah, when Griffin's carrying on conversations with himself in the form of three different people.
Yeah, or my personal favorite was from Pedals to the Metal, where it's like, Travis calls him out for Hurley not rolling. He goes, oh, yeah, she did great. And she kills four people.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, screw you. I'm the DM. I can do what I want.
Right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to the scene, we've discussed Aubrey's decisions. We've discussed Duck's decisions. We have not discussed Ned's decisions. Which primarily...
I mean, they're not great decisions.
I think it's a fantastic decision.
But they feel like very Ned decisions, though.
Yeah.
They feel, you know, very... So, yes. I agree that that's not some of the choices that I would have made in that situation. But I think Clint really has honed in on what and who Ned is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like Ned's whole MO for this arc might be, objectively bad choice, narratively great choice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, and I think Clint loves playing that role of like, I know I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to, you know, foon all over that water animal. That
right.
Water mole, water beast. That weast.
But that does effectively kind of take him out for the fight, you know, insofar as the fight was actually pretty short. This episode itself had very few beats to it that we've still been able to talk about at length, which is, I think just speaks to our skill.
Skill's one word for
but
it.
But he sort of gets himself into the pool and then is just there and has to be rescued by Duck.
Yeah, but I...
Though, I get... Doesn't he... Which one hits the tendril? Oh, he foons through the tendril.
Yeah, he foons the tendril.
He foons the tendril, naturally. I kind of like that, though, because it kind of... It forces the action. In a way that, you know, what was... It seemed like there was a decent chance Aubrey, Duck, and Ned were just going to stand around, look at the pool. The tendril comes up, and so they all just go away. They all just leave. Right. But that's, I mean, you don't find anything out that way. Not that, I don't know that they found a lot out this way. But I really enjoyed, you know, Ned sort of, or Clint sort of forcing the action. Just, no, we're, I don't think I can make it back to safety. Let's just, you know what, let's just do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it definitely, what it also tracks well with, the three of them, and I think especially Ned, riding the high of sort of, we're the Pine Guard, let's go do this. You know, with Ned attempting to wear the patch on the outside of his coat and going to get a tattoo or whatever of it. That Ned would see the first challenge they're facing as the official Pine Guard and really want to, you know, rush in and take care of it. Like, yeah, let's do this. Without giving it much more thought than that.
Right, without realizing that's a terrible idea.
Right. You have a stick.
Yeah.
Which he apparently didn't even bring with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was,
I enjoyed that scene very much.
It does. What I am heartened by, though, is if Aubrey is going to embrace her ability to make things colder, it does give Ned a reason to use his snowmobile he gave himself during the character building episodes. Because she could make, like snow paths for him or something.
Oh, yeah, like...
Some, like...
Like Frozone from The Incredibles?
Yeah, exactly.
That okay, would be, yeah, I can see that.
That would be dope.
That could be fun.
Let's do it. I mean, let's have them do it. Although, chilling things down to 55 degrees may not be enough.
Right. Well, if you want a cold beer, Aubrey's your girl.
You want a chilly beer.
Yeah, I mean, that's still not a great, like, consumption temperature for beverages. You know, I feel like down in the 30s and 40s is where I want it. Icy cold.
Plus, we don't even know if Aubrey's old enough to drink.
55 is the right temperature for, like, a room temperature red. It's a little warm. It's a little
warm. What room are you in that's 55 degrees?
Well, like a cave in the... Old world Europe, where the wine lives.
Also, my house in winter. I'm not paying that heating bill.
You cheap bastard.
Damn right. I'm paying to heat my house.
Should we head towards wrap up so Jake can stop having to talk? And because he looks like he's going to die.
Sorry, y'all. I've been having to mute my mic like every minute or so, too. Oh, shit. There's my voice going.
You're all right. Let's get us out of this thing.
Colin, I'm wondering... Yeah, that's bad. If I wanted to leave this episode, I might go to the zone of postulation.
Zone of postulation. Oh boy, I think that was real, real hot on the mic.
Yeah, this is... hi, listeners. You might have come back after a little jump in the action. This is Chris in post. So, Jake lost his voice during the episode, and Colin decided to really lean into making up for his volume, apparently. So, super sorry about the tale of this one.
Did you just do a live-action post?
Chris's director commentary on the episode.
Yeah, I'm dropping a marker for myself about that, too, so I can go back and find it.
This is Chris from post. From the...
from the live take.
From the take. It's pretty impressive. It's kind of like when you're in college and you have to edit your paper as you write it.
Yeah. All right, but zone of postulation time.
Yes, let us postulate.
I'm going to try to stick to big picture. I think they return to the lodge. They have a conversation, if not more than one, with Barclay. They go to the Cryptonomica.
Boy, really putting yourself out on a limb there, Chris.
Yeah, I'm betting super safe.
I think I'm going to take a similar strategy and say, Mama's going to be in this coming episode, and she's going to come back with a bomb. And one of these days, I'll be right.
A literal bomb or figurative bomb?
Yes.
Tight.
Tight. I think realizing that the water monster is everywhere, they're going to try and alert, come up with some BS reason for the town council that they... town council or mayor or whatever, that they have to get to the water supply and do all this research, and it'll be, I think, hilarious as they try and talk their way to the reservoir or wherever the water comes from.
Okay, here's a real zone of postulation. I postulate that the water monster will be able to take over people if it goes inside them.
Whoa.
That is a postulation.
Yeah, good. Called shot.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for Amnesty Episode 8, The Gang Goes to a City Council Meeting. Because that'll be comedy gold.
I wouldn't be until I saw the Brothers 3 go in front of the mayor on My Brother and Me TV show, and how well they handled that interaction with authority. So I really hope that's super what happens good. Again.
Yeah, yeah. They could just replay that scene from the TV show. They didn't even need to record it. Just
like the Rancho Parade.
Voices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do that. So, thanks for listening to We Do That. Come back next week to see what we got right, what we got wrong. See if Mama finally comes back. Next time we'll be discussing the third episode of season 2 of The Adventure Zone, Amnesty.
In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at WeDoThat_pod, and tweet at us using the AtazFanCast hashtag, or you can email us at WeDoThatPod@gmail.com. Send us your reactions, thoughts, and theories.
So that we can shamelessly steal them.
Special thanks to the Early for our intro and outro music, and for you listeners for putting up with this mess.
New episodes of We Do That come out every Monday after the Adventure Zone. Though, head to our Twitter right now where there's a poll. Now that they're going bi-weekly, we might change dates. We want to know, when do y'all want to hear us? Because we want to be there for you when you need us. Also, we've been missing the Mondays, so maybe it's time to mix it up.
It's a more realistic expectations for ourselves. If you enjoy listening to us, and We Do That, please rate us, review us, subscribe to us. On iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, and share this with all your friends that you think might enjoy our wonderful banter, and those you think it would really, you know, just grate on them. Both types of listeners are fine.
Bye, everybody.